Sometimes high concept works, like the television show Wishbone. In honor of monster trucks, what's the dumbest movie that brings you joy?
I'm Katie Rich, and I'm going to be kind of controversial and say The Parent Trap, because I don't think The Parent Trap is actually a bad movie, but the concept of separating twins and raising them in separate countries is so dumb, and yet they've gotten away with it twice.
Yeah, I was about to say the old version or the new version.
Lindsay Lohan version is my preferred one. My dad loves it, but I'll take either.
Yeah, I think the Lindsay Lohan version, especially now given who Lindsay Lohan is definitely stupider.
Great secret handshake in that movie.
That's true. I'm Dave with the Seven, and I've brought this up for two lightning round answers before, but you should really see the underwatched teen comedy 8 Days a Week. It's about a guy who has a crush on a young Carrie Russell and camps out on her lawn every day until she decides to go out on a date with him, which she
doesn't. That is awful.
Oh, yeah. It's like stalkery weird, but you should check it out. It makes me joyous.
I am Matt Patches, and I'm going to go with the incredible miracle of a Saturday Night Live adaptation, A Night at the Roxbury. Why? Because of the Mighty Duck Man, Emilio! That movie rules.
And I'm David Ehrlich, and I like Carol.
Great dumb movie. Great dumb movie.
I'm certain David's got a really dumb movie in his arsenal somewhere.
It's probably Step Brothers.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Fine, I can hear you now, Dimitri. Clear and plain and coming through fine. I'm coming through fine too, eh? Good. Then, as you say, we're both coming through fine. Good. Well, it's good that you're fine and I'm fine. I agree with you. It's great to be fine.
It's a podcast. Hello and welcome to Fighting in the War Room, episode 149. It's Tuesday, January 10th, 2017. Happy New Year, everybody.
Hey, Happy New Year.
But we're just now celebrating the New Year. Wow, this day in 1999, The Sopranos premiered on HBO.
That's the beginning of the golden age of television, some people would say.
Some people would say that. And
before was the silver age, when everyone wore
I was
going to
make a
costumes.
Young Pope joke right now, but Patches says he's sick of Young Pope jokes, so I won't do it.
Young Pope jokes are not clever enough. I feel like the media
age
has
of
already
television.
Worn out Young Pope jokes. It's really depressing. Let the show air, and then we can make Young Pope jokes. Jesus!
It's called Young Pope. We've started.
But I do have a really funny. I have a funny Young Pope joke coming up for when the show's on. It's about smoking pot and accidentally having the smoke come through that hole that announces the Pope. You'll get it. You'll get it soon.
I think I get it already, honestly.
Oh, okay.
I mean, there was a t-shirt when I was last in Vatican City that said, I like the Pope smokes dope, and it just had a roach with the Pope hat on.
What?
Was that the joke?
In Vatican City?
I mean, it was like a dude who was like holding out t-shirts, selling illicit t-shirts in the Vatican City.
There's no way it was in Vatican City.
I don't know, man. There's like, people are allowed to just go and watch the Pope address a crowd, and it's just a big crowd.
That's
I'm pretty
true.
Sure it was in Vatican City. It was years ago.
Gift shop.
Yeah, you know. Oh, well, I don't think it's like an official shirt. I'm saying it's like a bootleg shirt. It was with the Bart Simpsons pushing over like the Tower of Pisa and stuff.
You had a really interesting experience in Italy, it sounds.
Yeah.
Well, David is joining us this week's episode, but he's in a cab on his way here. So, Patches, you want to do reviews?
Sure. It's been a little while since we've read reviews because we did our top 10 episodes at the end of the year, and I don't think we read reviews then. We dedicated so much time to talking about our top 10. So if you haven't listened to that yet, double episode. So it's a whammy. But now we're back, and we're reading more reviews, and you should leave some. Go on iTunes and rate the podcast or leave a full review because we will read anything as evidenced by
this is the year we beat billions, right? Because you leave reviews.
I feel like we're beating billions. I haven't checked, but as soon as it comes back on, it's going to be stiff competition. And I really,
and
we
they
really
did,
need to ramp it up.
They gave Joanna that chess set at TCA.
Huh, they're buying iTunes reviews. Actually, this is something I want to say before we do reviews. And I keep meaning to say this and I forget to bring it up to you guys. So this is the first time you're hearing this.
Oh my God.
I have a signed poster of Manchester by the Sea, signed by Kenneth Lonergan, sitting in my home. I also have a custom La La Land poster sitting in my home. I also have a custom Jackie poster sitting in my home. All gifts from the BFCA Gold, the BFCA Awards, the Critic Choice Awards, just trying to buy my vote with cool shit. I'm not good. I don't want it. But if people who listen to the show want it, we should have some sort of like competition. So today's
this would have been a great thing to let everybody know you were going to do.
Here's the thing. I don't have an idea for the competition. So this week, let's all come up, and I'm all being people who listen to the show, come up with a way that we can decide who gets the cool posters. Because it takes a lot of time to think of these competitions, but we all want it to be fair, all of us being the listeners. So everyone tweeted us at FITWR to tell us how we should give away the posters, and I promise
we have done this in the past. We have mailed boxes of Transformers toys. I remember mailing it. It was expensive.
We definitely have. If you look at history proves it that we do make good on our offers. So we just need to figure out a way to give them away. Maybe it has to do with giving away a review, an iTunes review. Maybe if you leave an iTunes review this week, I'll just give you the poster. We don't even have to come up with a competition. I don't know.
Come on. I want some creativity.
All right, good. So people listening,
also, how are you
come up with an idea.
We'll figure it out.
Okay. So here are the actual reviews for this week. The first review is from Fred is Real Cool. 5 stars. I am writing review, so they read it on the podcast. There you go.
Perfect.
This is a podcast. If you don't watch movies, you might not like this podcast, but they don't talk about the movies all the time. So if you, for some reason, don't like movies, you can hear this here podcast and still might have the ability to like this podcast. Sometimes they do the thing where they talk about podcasts, but more of it is them just talking about music or the politics, but most is about the movies. And sometimes they talk about the sad movies, but sometimes the happy movies. I am sorry, I am bored, and they wanted reviews, and they read them on the pod, so I decided to write one, and that was just weird and have problems. This is easily my favorite movie podcast. You can tell they like movies and care about what they are talking about. There is never a dull moment during the podcast. Please follow my Tumblr at what is this? Watermelons. P.S. This was a good waste of time, and you don't need to follow me on Tumblr, but that would be cool because most of my followers are just bots, and it's so boring, and I need more people that watch good movies. That is a hell of a review.
Wow. I hope all the bored podcast listeners of America can take refuge in our iTunes reviews.
I tried to live up to the punctuation here. This is, you'll have to see it for yourself by going to iTunes and looking at this review. But it was
And then leaving a review while you're there.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, the other one is 5 stars from Twisted Chrome, who says, it's complicated. This is my 4th review in a year and a half. From 5 stars to 2 to 3, now back to 5. Going to keep it at a solid 5. Because I appreciate how difficult of an experience it can be at times. These are not, quote-unquote, easy people. And that challenge allows for a type of creative friction that people like me, who live for the chase in all spectrums of life, crave. This review will remain. Anything else would be looking a gift horse in the mouth. Damn.
Wow. What a roller coaster.
What a year. So that's 2016 in a nutshell. I don't know. Oh, wait. I'm sorry. 4th review in a year and a half. So we got a little 2015 in there. But we plummeted in the beginning of 2016 and really climbed our way back.
I'm so proud of us.
Maybe this person didn't like The Force Awakens and just couldn't stand us for 3 months.
We did talk about it for a long time.
Rough times there. Early 2016.
Big event.
Is that all for reviews for now?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, those are the end of the reviews. So
great.
Go leave some. And now we're going to do our first show of 2017, which should be looking back and looking forward.
All right, let's move ahead.
Hello.
Hey.
Hello, Russell.
Hi.
Hey, Russell.
Hi, David.
Russell made a wonderful short about, it was a musical, I believe, about llamas.
I'm in the middle of, it's my senior thesis. It's about alpacas. Very close.
Alpacas. I apologize.
No worries. It's a musical that is a take on classic Russian Soviet propaganda musicals, but like a modern version of one. You know, just what I think everyone wants after La La Land sweeps the Oscars.
La La Land.
I hope that we are recording this currently so that our listeners can hear about the Alpaca musical.
Oh, yeah. We are recording.
So for those of you out there, I, without necessarily informing my co-hosts about this, when I was raising funds for getting a new computer to make these video countdown things that I do. One of the prizes that I offered up was for a spot on our show, to talk for a segment of our show. And a band of brothers generously gave. And Russell Goldman is our first person from that group to come on the show, was among them. Russell was an intern for IndieWire. He is a very smart, talented Wesleyan student and filmmaker on the rise, and we are very happy to have him on the show, and I am very grateful for him and for his generosity. So welcome to the show, Russell.
Thank you. I'm grateful for your podcast. It's a lot of fun.
Well, you were until the time you were on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never meet your heroes, man.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
So, Russell, we're talking about the Golden Globes, which happened this past weekend. What happened at the Golden Globes? Fill us in.
Yeah,
I want every award.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Give me the macro. Give me the micro. Take the polls.
And we're just chime in.
Yeah.
Well, I remember it started with a long Jimmy Fallon intro and a monologue that didn't go so well. But I wasn't really. I don't know what I was really expecting from that. I saw a bit of. I was rewatching some of the Ricky Gervais stuff today, and it's obviously the tone is really different, but he plays the room in a way that, like, the Jimmy Fallon stuff was kind of weird. I don't know what you guys thought of Jimmy Fallon or think of him.
I don't think he's ever played a room in his life.
No.
I think he's played a room as like a giant musical instrument probably at some point, but
yeah. I think there was a keen sense that while the joke's not all that clever, certainly would have been much better received had they not been delivered by Jimmy Fallon, whose role in the Trump election was not lost on anybody in the room.
I mean, I'm trying to think of a
zinger that he had during the opening of the show.
I don't remember anything except Barb triumphantly rising from the pool like a Busby Berkeley musical, which did get a delighted laugh out of me.
He had some weird like rap joke about Jessica Chastain. Who did she
walk out?
That was
much later. That was much later.
Oh my god, that was at like.
I know, but it was frozen in time. It was the
Chastain
weirdest.
Chastain and the Red Mane.
Was that before or after the Chris Rock impression?
Oh well, after, yeah.
It was 8 years after the Chris Rock impression.
That was after the Chris Rock impression had killed me, and then I had somehow been brought back to life by I don't know several justifiable wins, particularly by The Crown. Love The Crown.
Yeah, The Crown. Yeah, we're going to talk about The Crown.
Love that Crown.
I need to watch The Crown.
You got to watch this Crown.
The Golden Globes, I thought this year, you know, Jimmy Fallon was standing, I suppose, it felt more foreign, for lack of a better. I mean, it's in the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. This ceremony felt more like an outsider's view in, especially with like the night manager winning everything. You know, you have Suzanne Beer directing and all these British actors, and it's just sweeping, and every American sitting at home is like, what, the night manager? What? I dropped off after episode one. What the fuck? Am I reading something
it's glitzy,
wrong about
I think,
this?
I think the Hollywood Foreign Press tends towards things that are very shimmering, that look good. I think the Crown, as much as I love it, falls into that category. Very lushly filmed.
Billy Bob Thornton Amazon series that
Goliath. We live again.
Pop quiz: what is Goliath? What is it
about? It's a show about a lawyer.
I had no idea.
It's on Amazon.
You have not watched every episode of Lion? Of Lion, of Goliath.
I was about to say, I think that's a film.
Yeah.
College kids love Goliath. It's the number one show.
The new Billions, right?
But speaking of.
Go on, please.
I was going to say, it feels like the Golden Globes kind of forget that a show exists after its first season, which is,
sure.
It's a nice contrast to the Emmys, which are like, that tend to reward things a lot as they go on. Like, I love seeing Atlanta on stage as much as it was, and I love seeing Donald Glover give speeches. There was a great red carpet bit with Yvette Nicole Brown, and they were just reminiscing over Community that I really loved.
Yeah, even if the Golden Globes like have such a short memory, like why not have it be the best show that is new? Like it's cool to see Donald Glover get to win a statue, and you know, even if he's never going to win it again.
But they may as well just call it best new show, you know, because it's always it always goes to the Mozart in the Jungle, the Brooklyn Nine-Nine, you know, whatever happens to be there in the first season. I guess they just draw off the star power that they can siphon from having the entire Game of Thrones cast come back. But speaking of Game of Thrones, Kit Harington appears in that opening segment. He was in London when they shot that and seamlessly cut it into the rest of it. And Russell, Matt, Katie, Dave, was anyone else as impressed with the fidelity to the opening number of La La Land that you saw in the opening number? No? I was.
The fidelity
I don't know.
Of the Jimmy Fallon's La La Land spoof.
They had
okay.
27 of the 30 La La Land dancers in that, the same people in that bit from the same choreographer.
That's impressive.
And they really respected, I thought, the grammar of the film grammar that was used in the scene from La La Land, and they were quite faithful.
I thought it was a little befuddling that they only paid tribute to La La Land. I mean, obviously there were a lot of references to other movies, Star Wars. I can't remember anything else. Stranger Things, kids rapping for some reason. Oh God! But the like all in on La La Land was so strange. Okay, yeah, it's gonna win awards. Who is? I mean, I should take this back. I was gonna say who has seen this movie. La La Land has made a lot of money. It's made $50 million so far, and it hasn't opened in more than 2,000 theaters, which is pretty damn impressive. But I still this all in. Sentiment, it just exhausts the awards season so much. Like, pay tribute to all the movies. Let's talk about everything. I'm burnt out on La La Land. It's
what musical opening sequence would you suggest inspired by Moonlight?
Or the police station scene from Manchester by the Sea. That'd be
oh my god.
It should have opened with Andre Holland silently cooking everyone black beans.
That would have been perfect. Really love
Wait, so Russell, as a the only musical filmmaker, I mean, Dave once made a Lost musical, or almost made a Lost, or a no, the Lost episode was something else. He almost made a Fighting in the War Room musical.
Yes, that's true.
Oh, cool.
But
yes, it would have been cool, and it was cool.
But we all refused to sing. But
I guess that wouldn't work.
As the only one of us who has actually brought a musical project to fruition, what do you think of La La Land?
I'm a big fan of La La Land. I did a top 10 like everyone else did, I guess. And I think it deals with nostalgia in an interesting way. I've also talked about to a lot of friends about the whiteness of La La Land because I have a lot of people that were a bit repelled by or a bit confused by, I think, what the film is trying to say about Gosling's character's perspective on jazz.
I thought you were going to say you have a lot of white friends because you go to Wesleyan.
Also true.
There are a lot of white people there.
But I think it becomes weird when an organization like the Golden Globes gives La La Land 7 nominations and then awards it 7 times, which I think they love the movie and clearly they want to support it, but it makes the film into something that I think people, media, everyone kind of wants to take down. Or I'm not sure if you guys feel the same way. Like it starts the overrated conversation.
I don't feel that way at all because I feel like the dreamers who dream should dream along and dream dreams safe. Dreamers should get the dreaming chance to dream. That's all I'm going to say.
I do think that Russell's right on the money and that watching a show like last night, La La Land becomes the enemy. And I think that's unfair because all the ingredients were there for that to happen and all the criticisms, particularly the nature of those criticisms. And you compare that to the movies and the movie, particularly in regards to Moonlight, that it was up against. It was sort of a perfect storm of people hating La La Land after this, which I think is really unfortunate.
It's unfortunate.
I thought Meryl Streep's takedown of La La Land was really extreme.
But how perfect for us, and they save this twist into the last minute, but you won't be able to get something like this at the Oscars, but that both La La Land and Moonlight effectively won Best Picture last night, which is really a better scenario than we can hope for out of the Oscars.
Yeah, I'm wondering if that makes up for the Aaron Taylor Johnson win.
I was just going to say, like race relations were saved at the last minute. Otherwise, it would have been real bad.
Katie, is he even going to get nominated for an Oscar? That was a shock.
I looked this up, inspired by our friend David Sims. There is one time in the history of these award shows where someone who has won Best Supporting Actor, the Golden Globes, was not nominated for an Oscar. So
I don't think he'll get nominated.
You don't think he will?
No. I mean,
There's like no more buzz around Nocturnal Animals anymore.
Well, unless Tom Ford wants to buy perfume for every single one of the 7,000 members of the Academy.
He could.
Seriously, I think that has something to do with it.
I mean, it was
crazy.
It was bad enough for the tourists to get nominated. For Nocturnal Animals to win was perverse. But you're talking about a very small group of people. You're talking about 70-some-odd people. It's really, if the Golden Globes were not nationally televised and had become this thing, no one would give a shit about what these people have to say because they are not representative of a larger voting body and of the populace at large. And I think it's amazing that you can see someone like Aaron Taylor Johnson, who we're talking about maybe not even being nominated for an Oscar, win the award, whereas it still seems to me open and shut that Mahershala Ali is going to win the Oscar.
Oh, definitely. So, but I think that Hugh Grant being nominated for Florence Foster Jenkins is not a guarantee, and it could easily be Aaron Taylor Johnson in his place.
Sure.
I just, Aaron Taylor Johnson, I mean, yes, he pooped on a porch. But
I've not seen the film.
Mean,
I've only heard.
Oh
this,
my God.
Sacha Baron Cohen got hit in the face with an elephant penis. Like, he deserves an award.
And at the end of spoiler alert for anyone who's holding their breath for Grimsby on HBO, but that movie ends with Donald Trump becoming infected with HIV. I am not making that up.
Oh yeah. And wow. The Queen too, right?
Wow. Yeah.
There's a lot of things to see out there, but Russell, you really owe it to yourself and to all of your friends at Wesleyan to watch Nocturnal Animals. You're missing out.
No, you're not. There are so many other things to watch with your life.
I can't wait to be the first Wesleyan student to see Nocturnal Animals.
You got to bring it to Middletown.
I like The Single Man. I just haven't gotten around to this one.
If Nocturnal Animals comes to Distenta, you have to call me and just let me know how Distenta is doing with its multiplex selection.
I think it's called Metro Movies now. You're talking
about the movie theater downtown, the one.
Yeah. The one. Metro Movies 8 or 12 or whatever.
This conversation took a global turn for the worst.
We're
guys, you're
now.
Not fascinated by this.
Wait, so you Middletown, Connecticut has a multiplex that has 8
what
or 10
fuck?
Screens?
No.
Yeah, it does.
I'm interested in this.
You can walk there from campus.
Wow. And if you want to see anything that isn't, you know, Underworld Evolution, like, you can go to New Haven. I saw The Handmaiden there in November.
Blood Wars. The new one is called Blood Wars.
How dare you come onto our show and call it Evolution? Get out of here.
I saw a Matrix sequel there, the first one. That was my multiplex experience in college.
Having Russell on the show is just my Trojan horse to really galvanize the Wesleyan audience to engage with our show. So I think I think this was effective.
Oh, awesome.
So thank you for being ruthlessly exploited for those purposes. And thank you so much for coming on our show.
Yeah, thank you, guys. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Russell.
Well, Russell, do you want to say anything to our audience before you go? Is there anything you want to shamelessly promote as we would if we were in your shoes?
Yep.
I am on
social
Twitter.
Social media feed? Yes, go on.
I'm on Twitter, Russell Tweets with a Z. I'm finishing a film called Alpacaland that's coming out soon. I have no idea what will happen with it once it's finished, but hopefully it's something
probably
I want to share with the world.
Yeah. Alpacaland. It's gonna be good.
I am so excited to work with Kate Beckinsale. That's pretty much it.
Russell is great. I can speak from personal experience. We're very happy to have him on the show, and thank you very much, Russell.
Thank you, guys.
For this week's mini segments, I fell down a rabbit hole this week because I didn't realize this when I did it, but this year, 2017, is kind of the 10th anniversary of Netflix Watch Instantly. It started as Watch Now, and it did not roll out to every single person at the exact same time. So I think they launched it very early in 2017, and some of us got it right away. Some of it came over the summer. Some people had to wait.
Where were you when you got Watch Now?
Apparently, I was not.
Now.
What? 2017. This was in
You said really early in 2007. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm getting my dates screwed up. My bad. You get the
picture. Do you remember where you were when you got the call?
Apparently, I was not watching Netflix because it took me a year, as I've realized, to watch a movie on Netflix streaming. So if you want to see the first things that you watched on Watch Now, you can go to your account and go into viewing activity and actually see the first movies that you watched on Watch Instantly. And I failed to start a hashtag fun game on Twitter, so I thought I'd bring it to the podcast to force you all into telling me the first 10 movies that you saw on Watch Instantly. I will share first because I have it right in front of me and I'm already talking.
My God.
The first movie
Mine
I
are
watched,
so good.
November 2nd, 2008, was 2 Days in Paris. A Julie Delpy joint. I started high quality. Well,
a very recent movie at that point.
Yeah, well, you know, when they first started, they had a lot of, like, year or two ago indie movies, but, like, small stuff. So my list, going down my list, was Bridge to Terabithia, Better Than Expected kids movie, Capturing the Friedmans, popular documentary, Renaissance, a French animated science fiction film, Legend, the Tom Cruise Ridley Scott movie, Diggers, a movie starring a lot of funny people from the States and Paul Rudd, and they shot it out in Montauk, I think, and it's just about diggers. Clam diggers? Yeah, I think clam diggers. And then The Great New Wonderful, a movie I haven't thought about since November 17th, 2008, when I watched it. The King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters, that documentary that the Ain't It Coolers of the world, like, jizz-whizzed into eternity over. I mean, they loved it.
So much jizz-whizz.
I mean, it's good.
It's a good video game documentary. You guys are weird.
But like,
you ever drawn on your screen with a grease pen so you could beat a video game? You're the weird ones.
And then I watched National Treasure, Book of Secrets. Little Nick Cage joint. And then I watched My Kid Could Paint That. A documentary about a kid who, a masterful painter, but was he? I don't remember if he was or not. Like, I think it was a hoax, but I'm not sure. It's been a long time.
You may have to watch that again.
Yes, I'm going to have to.
I feel like you chose this because you had pretty good taste.
Did I?
You
no.
Wanted to, like, shame the rest of us.
I honestly thought it was going to be, like, Heroes,
I was so
season
on brand,
one.
You don't even know.
Okay, Katie.
All right. Wait, Patrick, are you done?
Yes, go for it.
Okay, so, yeah, go. No, I was going to say, David, you should go. You're so on brand. Let's hear it.
I just now, as Patches was setting up the segment, looked at what my viewing history was. I am very proud of myself. The very first movie that I watched on Netflix Instant on February 7th, 2010.
Wow.
Wow, what took you so long?
Because I'm a purist and I believe in physical media, was Chris Marker's Sans Soleil.
On brand.
And then later that same day, I watched Guy Maddin's Careful. And then 15 days later, I watched Nagisa Oshima's final film, Taboo. And then in March of that year, I watched James Gray's Two Lovers. And later in March of that year, I watched Theo Angelopoulos' Eternity and a Day, I think probably shortly after he died or right around that time. And then Scorsese's The Age of Innocence, and then Curveball, When Harry Met Sally, which is also the most recent film that I've watched on Netflix Instant.
Whoa.
I watched it with my fiance on New Year's Day. And
I watched on New Year's Day, too.
Yeah, because when you realize that you want to start the rest of your life or know who you want to start the rest of your life with, whatever the line is, you want the rest of your life to start as soon as possible. And then on May 3rd, 2010, I watched Fargo. And May 4th, My Left Foot. And then, finally, on June 1st, 2010, I watched The Karate Kid.
You know, Netflix was really the movie of its time. There are no good movies on Netflix anymore.
No, none of these good movies, I guess,
so
except
sad.
For When Harry Met Sally, are on here anymore. Okay, so I was sharing my Netflix password with my roommate, so in my first 10, there are definitely titles that I certainly never watched, but I guess I will read them anyway. But the first movie I watched, I'm pretty proud of, is The Diving Bell and the Butterfly on November 28th, 2008, which is like a year after it came out. I then watched Groundhog Day on the day after Groundhog Day in 2009. Then Diner, which I know I have never seen, so that must have been my roommate.
Diner last week for the first time. Crazy.
Was that? You saw Diner
last week?
First time
last week, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, crazy.
All right, well, maybe I should watch it. Too bad it's not on Netflix anymore. Then we have Kramer versus Kramer and The Ice Storm, two solid choices. Victor Victoria, which, again, I'm certain I didn't watch. But then again, like 3 weeks later, it's The Music Man, which I know I did watch. So maybe I just watched Victor Victoria and forgot about it. Then it's King Korn, which I think is a documentary like about the corn industry. I didn't watch this one. then it's all caps, show, colon, series 2, colon, A River Runs Through It. I don't know what this is. When I click on it, it gives me an error link. I have no idea. I really need to talk to my old roommate about this. And then we wrap things up on May 10th, 2009 with Dan in Real Life.
Damn.
I know. Nice. It's a real mishmash in there.
Wait, very quick tangent. Did you know Dan in Real Life, directed by Peter Hedges, who's an author, but turned screenwriter, turned director. Who is his son? Lucas Hedges from Manchester by the Sea.
What?
I did know this.
And Lucas Hedges in Dan with Real Life.
Dan in Real Life. What was he, like, 8 in that?
Yeah. That blew my mind.
I'm afraid that we're going to move on past this too quickly for it to register. this is mind-blowing. This is major. Wow. Dave, give me a little pause before you read your list, because...
Well, okay. You know, it's also on a podcast, so you could just rewind and
everyone
hear it again.
Listening, please pause your recording for a few seconds.
Let that sink in. So I was sharing a Netflix account. So this is like Dave gets his own private Netflix at around February 2009. And you can see I like spottily use it. I'm mostly using it to catch up on TV shows. But movies. February 2009, I do Sphere and Man on Wire. I obviously just went straight for Sphere. Like, that would be the first thing I would watch streaming now. Bottle Rocket. Hancock, which I just remembered existed now that I'm seeing it. Gross Point Blank. That I take like a month and a half to rewatch a whole bunch of Lost.
you would. Brand.
Muppets, and then I come back, Muppets Take Manhattan, Batman and Robin, and Memento in 3 consecutive days. So
wait,
that
you watched
must have
Memento
been a weird
3
week.
Days in a row?
No. Muppets Take Manhattan, Batman and Robin, and then Memento. I have no idea what I was doing. Yeah. And then
like drugs.
I think, what's my last one? The Insider was like the day after that. So yeah, probably drugs. It sounds like drugs.
But Dave, my name is not Harry. That's a Sphere reference.
Go. Oh.
Yeah, really
gold orb is
the
gold
like...
spheres, they'll jolting out of the ocean.
I'm just doing a quick tangent. If you want to use Netflix as a diary and like look for significant dates in your life and see what you're watching, 2 days after I brought my son home from the hospital, I watched 10 episodes of 30 Rock.
Yeah.
So
but
you can
also,
see where my brain was.
We have Letterboxd for this now, so.
Yeah, but Netflix does it automatically.
I suppose.
I don't know. See, this makes it sad. I watched the entire first season of Lost on my birthday 1 year.
That's really
on that sad note. Netflix, watch it, Lee. Happy 10th birthday. You're really kind of going downhill, but
yeah, you've really, really done a good job of having fewer than 100 movies made before 1980 on your service. Fuck you. Goodbye.
Down by the river that flows by the coal yards stand wooden houses with shutters torn down. There lives a girl everybody calls Patches. Patches, my darling, of Oceany Town.
So to wrap up this week's episode, we are going to take one more look back at 2016 in a segment. I don't think I named it this, but other people certainly have because people were tweeting at us asking for us to do this. A round of Patches Matches trivia. So these are usually questions that are too hard to really answer and give you a look back at the year. And the three of you are going to struggle. For my pleasure, as well as the listeners. So, to kick it off, to figure out, I have created 3 lists of questions for you. Decide randomly who gets what. Shout out your answers to this question, which is, how much money did Absolutely Fabulous the movie make in America. Yes, absolutely fabulous kind of movie.
$300,000.
Okay. $800,000.
$80,000. $80,000.
Guys, are so $4.7 million.
Wow.
Do not underestimate.
I feel like I know people who like AbFab, but I know nobody that saw that movie.
Clearly people did. So who had the most? Who was the closest? I think Katie.
I had 800,000. Yeah.
Okay, and then David, and then Dave. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try and keep track of points, and I'm going to try and be quick, and you're going to answer these questions. So, Katie, you're up first.
Yeah.
So there were 5 wide-released movies, and when I'm defining wide-released as more than 900 theaters. That I've been trying to figure out exactly how many theaters counts as wide-released, and I've seen multiple sources say 900, but it's all over the place. But for this, okay, it's going to be 900 theaters.
5 movies?
So 5 wide-released movies were named after their female characters this year.
Oh my God.
So the title of the movie is the name of the female character. All you have to do is name 3 of them. And I'll tell you up front, wide-released, no Christine. That's definitely a bar. Christine was not released in enough theaters to count. So.
Oh, wow. Or Kate plays Christine, I'm assuming. Also that.
True.
Okay, Moana.
Ding.
Miss Sloane?
That's correct.
Oh, shit. Okay. Those were the only 2 that I could come up with off the top of my head. Oh, man.
Well, you have 3 name more shots.
Female character. How am I supposed to think of movies named for female characters?
Because the name is right there in the movie.
I've got 2 right already ready to go.
Oh, an L is not wide released.
Nope.
That's also, it doesn't count. L? The name of the movie is Woman.
I'm going to give you about 10 more seconds.
Okay, Ghostbusters doesn't count.
Definitely not. Not a name.
But they're Ghostbusters. Loving, because Mildred Loving?
No, I'm sorry.
No.
I'm not going to give you that
one. I think I only got 2.
You didn't get it.
You got Miss Sloane and you got Morgan.
Yeah, you forgot
Morgan.
Morgan is a good one, yes. Jackie
Morgan
is technically now.
Jackie.
And then you have Florence Foster Jenkins.
Florence Foster Jenkins. Wait, what's Morgan? I'm still looking this up.
Morgan.
It was an Anna Taylor-Joy Ex Machina ripoff.
Oh, yeah. That came out last little maternity leave. I didn't know that existed.
I'm like,
me either.
Okay, David, in a similar vein, 4 wide-release movies that were released after August, so in the fall only, were named after male characters. 4 of them. The patriarchy. Name 3.
Sully, Doctor Strange, and here we go. Okay. Moonlight's not a guy.
Nope.
Well,
he might.
Hacksaw Ridge, not a guy.
I have it tattooed.
Sing, not a guy. Let's go with, how many were there overall?
There were 4.
There were 4. And they're wide releases.
Yes, these are big movies.
Big fucking movies.
Big man movies with man names in the title.
There wasn't a Thor.
No, you already got the Marvel.
I got the Marvel.
The Marvel. It's in can.
The Salesman? Does that count?
No.
Hold on.
I'll give you 15 seconds here.
Oh, my God. Awards nominations.
Definitely the wrong path.
The wrong path.
All right. You're done.
Wait. No, there's no way.
This is going to be so obvious.
Fuck.
You missed Snowden.
Everyone did.
And you missed the big one here, Max Steel, based on the popular cartoon character.
Right, I have to give myself some credit. If you could have given me 15 more minutes, I would not have gotten either of those movies.
I got a rush here. I've got so many questions for you. Dave, 3 movies, not necessarily wide releases, so this is going to be all over the map, but I think it might.
Great.
I think you'll still get this. We're named after the witches in their title. Name 3 movies.
The Witch?
Yeah.
Named after the witches in their titles.
Yes.
Other movies with witches.
Dave, come on.
What?
Come on. I didn't want to say it, but come on.
One came up in the top 10 episode.
Wow. Oh, wow.
You edited it.
I edited a whole movie about a witch and I forgot about
the top 10 episode.
During the top 10 episode, when we were yammering on, you edited a film. No.
I edited a film about witches. Man.
You're going to be so sad if you get this one.
I am going to be sad because I already feel like I know it. It's just not coming to the forefront of my brain.
Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, tell me about the tell me.
Well,
the
you
witch
got the witch.
Yeah.
You didn't get the love witch.
Oh.
The love witch.
The love
but
witch.
Here's the thing, Dave. You didn't get Blair Witch.
Blair Witch.
Okay, here's... Wait.
Ha ha. Right.
That's
we,
not
we
her
need
name.
We have a discussion
that's...
about whether or not the Blair Witch is in the Blair
that's
Witch.
That's the name of her. Oh, I see.
But that... we get, that's a
whole
nitpicky
other episode,
thing.
Whole other episode.
Just okay. Patches in that.
All right, Katie.
Okay.
This is we're moving on to a segment where I'm going to name a bunch of actors and you have to tell me what movie they starred in. Okay?
But like they were all in one movie?
Yes. So what movie starred James Badge Dale, Pablo Schreiber of Orange is the New Black, and John Krasinski? Lord.
Oh, Benghazi. The 13 Hours of Secret Soldiers of Benghazi?
Yes, which is how Michael Bay pronounces it every time he says the title.
Benghazi.
That's correct. David, what movie starred Lena Headey, Charles Dance, and Doctor Who's Matt Smith?
What?
Yeah. It could be a Game of Thrones movie, but it's not.
Charles Dance... Lena Headey and Matt Smith?
I think of The Crown when I think of Matt Smith now. I think of Judge Dredd when I think of Lena Headey.
Oh, shit. Oh,
I got it. Wait, no, I think, no, fuck. No.
Yeah,
I was thinking of Me Before You. I was thinking of Me Before You, but only Charles Dance is in that.
Use your brain.
My brain?
Brain
zombies? Zombie movies.
I'll give you 10 seconds here.
Was there a zombie movie this year?
I don't know.
if there was, it was probably awful.
You're definitely making the sound of a zombie. Oh, you're out of time. Sorry, David. It was Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Oh, God.
Which is an underrated
again
movie. It's actually not that bad.
With all the minutes in the world, I would not
Sam
have come
Riley
up with that.
Okay,
Sam
Dave.
Riley.
Dave, what movie starred Laura Linney, Tyler Perry, and Will Arnett?
I think I know this one.
The trifecta of prestige pictures.
I was not Laura Linney, Tyler Perry, Will Arnett. That'd be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 Out of the Shadows.
Wow.
Yeah.
Shit. I saw that and I didn't know the answer, but as soon as he said it, I was like, that's right.
Yep.
All right, Katie. What movie starred Dave Franco, Emma Roberts, and Juliette Lewis?
Oh, shit. That movie that people liked.
Oh,
like,
give me a chance. Put me in,
oh
coach. Put me in.
It's not, it's like, it's got one word, nerve?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Oh.
Way to go.
Yeah.
Nerve's a good movie. I like Nerve.
Okay.
And people like Nerve.
David, what movie starred Zach Galifianakis, Owen Wilson, and Kristen Wiig?
Masterminds.
Oh, you didn't even give me a chance to finish.
2 points.
For the audience. Think of the audience. They didn't see Masterminds.
What is Masterminds?
Did you
see
Masterminds?
No.
I did not see Masterminds, but I have a writer works for me who swears by it, who says it's completely underrated, deserves your attention.
Oh,
I don't know. I can't look back from Napoleon Dynamite. Scarred forever. Dave, what movie starred Alison Brie, Leslie Mann, and Rebel Wilson?
Oh, come on.
Good
which David should watch a few more times on HBO until he realizes it's pretty good.
It is good. I like it.
Okay, it's going to have to be Rebel Wilson. That's going to be a fit through line.
She's not doing as many movies.
Single come out? Is it How to Be Single?
Yes.
Okay.
God, that was 2016, huh?
Valentine's Day, yo.
All right, Katie. What movie starred Thomas Lennon, Wes Bentley, and Natalie Portman?
Jesus Christ. What?
The hilarious Thomas Lennon, the hilarious Wes Bentley, and the hilarious Natalie Portman. What movie did they do together this year?
It is impossible to me that there's a movie that isn't Jackie that has Natalie Portman in it, and I cannot...
There are actually two other Natalie Portman movies this year.
Yeah, because Thomas Lennon was not in A Tale of Love and Darkness.
Oh, I'm sorry, that means three other Natalie Portman movies.
Okay.
Wait, is it the Malick movie?
What's it called?
Not to the wonder. It's
What's it called, Katie?
Oh, shit.
Is it the one that? No, it's not Restless. It's King of Cups. Knight of Cups.
No,
Knight of Cups.
No. Oh,
Knight of Cups. Did I get it right?
I'm giving it to you. I'm glad you got there.
Yes. The Jeopardy judges would not allow such shenanigans.
And also, the other Natalie Portman movies are Jane Got a Gun.
Jane Got a Gun. Really?
Yeah.
I would have sworn that was 2015.
No, it came out in June.
Wait, what was the other one?
Oh, it was the film that she directed that you mentioned.
Well, no, there was The Tale of Love and Darkness, A Night of Cups, and Jane Got a Gun. Okay.
All right,
wow,
David.
Natalie.
What movie starred, got quite a lineup here, Naomi Watts, Octavia Spencer, and Maggie Q?
Was it that movie If I Stay? Not If I Stay. That was the Chloe Grace Moretz movie last year. A Shut-In. No?
No.
What?
Not Shut-In?
No.
Okay.
Also, wait.
There wasn't a... Hold on.
Wait, you're getting a second guess?
Hold on. Octavia Spencer. Naomi Watts had a real shit year. So I can't imagine this is a movie worth seeing.
You might be on the right track with that one, but I'm not sure it's going to narrow it down... category.
Oh, man. And I used to be a Naomi Watts completist.
I think you guessed and failed here.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll allow it.
I'm sorry to say it was the Divergent series, Allegiant, Part 1. Now, just Allegiant. No, Part 2 on it, right?
Why did I not get Katie's questions? I could have knocked those out of the park.
You had a chance. All right, Dave. What movie starred Jason Statham, Jessica Alba, and Tommy Lee Jones? An actual movie that came out this year.
Holy Lord. It came.
This is my happy face.
Is this the new mechanic movie?
Do you know what it's called?
Do you have to know the name of the mechanic movie?
It has a subtitle.
Resuscitation, revival, new blood, blood wars.
I'm gonna give you a half point. I'm giving you a half
resurrection.
Point.
Resurrection.
Oh God!
You are
serious?
You were so close.
Half point, Dave. Yes, there was another mechanic movie for
franchises
some reason.
In this moment.
Why does Jessica Alba bother making movies when she's got her diaper billions?
That's a very good question.
Wait, does she run a successful mommy blog, or it's a
honest company?
No, she runs. She makes more money than anyone else in Hollywood. It's insane.
Katie, so Jake Gyllenhaal made two movies this year where his character deals with the death of his wife. In which one does he dismantle a refrigerator?
I've not seen this movie, but I do believe it's Demolition.
That's correct.
Oh my God. Come on.
Hey, you could have gotten these questions. You could have gotten these questions. Here's your question, David. So Emily Blunt made two pretty goddamn awful movies this year. In which one did she utter the line, "I need to remember"?
It's gotta be The Girl on the Train.
That is correct.
That
what
is, I can't think of the other one, but
Huntsman, Winter's War.
Oh, thank God.
Boy.
Which
she definitely says
that
in The Girl on the Train.
In that movie. Dave, so Johnny Depp appeared in three movies this year, technically. In which one does he say the line, "Haters have got to hate, like the douches have to douche"? That's the life, right there in a nutshell.
That's got to be Yoga Hosers.
It is Yoga Hosers, directed by Kevin Smith, who plays a sausage Nazi in the movie.
Oh my God.
Did you see it, Dave?
Did I see Yoga Hosers?
Yes,
no,
admit it.
But one of the bud tenders at my dispensary has talked me through what she thought was a very enjoyable Kevin Smith movie.
But can we safely say that if any one of the people on this podcast had seen the Yoga Hosers, it would have been Dave.
I've seen it.
I think if anybody is... I was going to say I thought I was going to beat everybody, but I could see myself pain watching.
I saw that Midnight at Sundance. Oh.
You
isn't
fool.
Isn't it just lesser female clerks within...
Yes, and actually the two of them are pretty funny. His daughter and Johnny Depp's daughter, they should be in a movie together doing something funny. This is not the movie. Anyway, Katie... This is a Rotten Tomatoes themed segment. You just have to tell me which has the better Rotten Tomatoes score, the fresher score, okay?
Oh, boy.
So what has the better score? Hardcore Henry, a kind of first-person video game-inspired movie, or Assassin's Creed, a video game movie that tries to not be one as much as possible?
I'm betting Hardcore Henry.
Has a higher score.
Yes.
That is correct.
Hey!
Of course,
it's correct. 49%.
Which one of those?
It has a 49%.
Which one of those did David give a better review?
Yes, David gave a positive review to Assassin's Creed, which has a 19% Rotten Tomatoes score. All right, Dave.
Fassbender had a bad year.
David, yours is, which has the fresher score? Mother's Day,
Nope. Or, nope, the other one.
Or Hillary's America, The Secret History of the Democratic Party. Oh, no.
This is so hard.
That is a tough one. That is tough.
Okay, let me think this one through. So,
now you saw both.
I've seen both. I have written unkind things about both. It is inconceivable to me that anyone could have written anything positive about Mother's Day. However, it is conceivable to me that the movie guru, the New York City movie guru, could have, and I believe did, say positive things about Hillary's America, thinking that it was an eye-opening documentary.
We're not directing
really
people to that man's website, by the way.
Wait, is this the person that says that acting is a special effect?
Yes.
Yes.
God.
And that, judges, I think that,
judges movies on a scale of heart, courage, and timidity or whatever.
Yeah. How many times he checks his watch is a metric of his movies. Anyway.
So by that logic, I have to say that Hillary's America had the higher score.
Surprisingly not. Mother's Day Mother's Day has a 7%. Hillary has 4%.
I thought I really showed my work on that one. That's too bad.
You worked through it. It was close. Dave? What has the fresher Rotten Tomatoes score? Now You See Me 2 or Fantastic Beasts? Both magic. One is real magic.
Fantastic Beasts, I would guess.
You're right. Maybe that was too easy. Fantastic Beasts has 73%. Softball. But actually, I thought so many people like Now You See Me 2.
Including me.
34% on Rotten Tomatoes.
That's why Trump is president.
Probably.
All right, Katie, this segment is... What did David say on Rotten Tomatoes about this movie? Okay, Katie. What movie did David say, oh, what a deliciously horrific idea this movie was, with an exclamation point?
Oh, God, there's so many choices.
There are a lot of movies.
I'm going with Mother's Day.
Oh, no, I wouldn't use Mother's Day twice in a Patches Matches. What's wrong with you? No, this was Alice Through the Looking Glass.
Oh, yeah. Yep, that's a terrible idea.
Oh, what
idea.
A deliciously horrific idea that movie was. Okay, David. What movie did you call an immaculate case study in how far blockbusters have fallen?
Oh, boy. Could be so many movies. Immaculate case study in
how far blockbusters have fallen.
Oh, I think I know this one.
Oh, God.
I don't know
is
if it's a good sign or a bad sign that it could be so many things.
I think I'm going to get this wrong. But I'm going to go with Jason Bourne.
No. Independence Day Resurgence.
I didn't even review Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
Whatever. Independence Day Resurgence is an immaculate case study of our Brooklyn.
Okay. Dave, what movie did David say, you've been laughing at this movie for months, and the final product earns all of your worst preconceptions?
Suicide Squad.
Oh, close. Well, another Warner Brothers film, The Legend of Tarzan. I wasn't laughing at the movie for months. I didn't even know
yeah,
it came
you were.
Out.
Not enough abs in the world to save that one.
Okay, here's a two box office questions for all of you. So, I just thought this was staggering. 728 movies came out this year. The box office total was $10.7 billion.
I had to review all of them.
Yeah, that's insane. but Katie, here's the pressing question of the year. What made more domestically, Batman v Superman or Suicide Squad?
Oh, I think Batman v Superman.
You're correct. With $330.4 million, just beat Suicide Squad, $325.1 million.
Oh, wow. Actually, I didn't realize you were in that.
Yeah,
that
really
together.
Close. Really close.
Wow.
I wasn't going to compare it to to Captain America because not even close on that one. David, so... Dirty Grandpa,
yeah,
the Zac Efron Aubrey Plaza comedy co-starring Robert De Niro, or Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates, the Zac Efron Aubrey Plaza comedy co-starring a tweaking out Anna Kendrick and whatever his name is from that show on Comedy Central. Which one made more money?
I believe that Mike and Dave Need Wedding Dates was not a financial disaster. So I'm going to go with that.
I think you are correct. Mike and Dave made $46 million. That seems slightly respectable. Dirty Grandpa made $35 million. I guess in the doldrums of January, you go see Dirty Grandpa because you don't want to see whatever's vying for the Oscars. Ugh, snooze. Dave, what grossed more? Storks?
Passengers.
A real animated film from this year. or Ice Age Collision Course, the fifth installment of the Ice Age franchise.
Oh, which grossed more? Ice Age Collision Course.
No, Storks, an original film. Storks made $72.6 million, a movie about storks. It beat.
But did Ice Age Collision Course make a fortune overseas?
Well, so Ice Age 5 made $64 million in America. Total disappointment. Why will there be an Ice Age 6? It made $334 million world or overseas. That's insane.
Where they're like, storks, obviously, it's dragons.
Storks. John Leguizamo is getting terrifyingly rich off the Ice Age franchise.
Yeah, Dennis never has to work.
He was so rich now that he did those like Time Warner cable commercials or whatever they are, where he plays multiple John Leguizamos for free.
Will not be
just for the love of the game. That's how rich he is now.
All right, Katie. So Bad Moms was a huge hit, which is why they are fast-tracking a Bad Moms Christmas movie for this holiday season, 2017. Nightmare. But it wasn't actually the biggest movie of Mila Kunis, Jada Pinkett Smith, or Christina Applegate's career. So the question to you is, who has starred in the biggest movie? And if you know what it is, I'll throw you an extra point.
Wait, who are the women? It's Mila Kunis, Christina
Jada
Applegate.
Pinkett Smith, and Christina Applegate. Who starred in the biggest movie? And if you can tell me what it is, extra point to you.
I think I know.
I'm going to say it's Mila Kunis and Ted.
No.
You are close. I don't... Dave?
Oh, she was...
Well...
Oh, she was close?
Close is... It's just me being nice. What is your guess, David?
I was going to say Jada Pinkett Smith in The Matrix Reloaded.
You're absolutely correct.
Matrix
Reloaded made $281.5 million. So Mila Kunis
didn't even fuck up and say Revolutions like you all thought I would.
I definitely forgot she was in a Matrix.
But Ted is not Mila Kunis' biggest movie. Oz, Great and Powerful.
And then Christina Applegate. So I wasn't remotely close. You don't have to sugarcoat this.
I'm sorry. I was just trying to be nice. Christina Applegate, Bad Moms was almost her biggest movie, but Anchorman 2, The Legend Continues, was actually bigger with $127 million.
What about Catherine Hahn?
Catherine Hahn doesn't even get a link on Box Office Mojo to tell you how many movies she's made to calculate.
Catherine Hahn is the only one of those women who was in Step Brothers, and so Catherine Hahn is the best. Although Mila Kunis was in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, it's neck and neck.
David, here's your question. So Disney made huge money this year. They made over $4 billion worldwide, and we were talking about a $10 billion total of the entire year. So they actually have the top five grossing films. What are
they
in
the
order?
Top five. Wow.
From least to most money, the five Disney films that make up the top five worldwide currently, as of this recording.
Worldwide.
Yeah, worldwide.
All right. Well, number one is whatever the fuck, Captain America.
Okay.
Number two is Rogue One. Number three is, let me see, because the other ones are Zootopia, Moana, and The Jungle Book. So now it's just about figuring out the order. I got to think Moana is probably number five at this point. Zootopia, number four, The Jungle Book, number three.
No. So Moana is a disappointment. Moana's not making as much money.
Oh, Moana didn't clock.
No, Moana is not in this. So it's actually five is Rogue One right now, which has made $914 million. Jungle Book has made $966 million, coming number four. Zootopia is number three with just over $1 billion. Number two is Finding Dory with just over $1 billion. And then Captain America, $1.1 billion.
I knew that Rogue One was number two on some metric. I forgot that it was domestic.
David, you had the great tweet about Finding Dory and Hamilton, and you left it all behind.
Wait, what was my Finding Dory tweet about Hamilton?
Let me tell you what I wish I knew when I was younger than Dory. You're probably going to see Finding Dory.
Sorry, this is me laughing way too loudly. I've clearly had a lot to drink tonight, so I'm allowed.
So, Dave, what limited release movie made the most money last year? And my metric again is 900 theaters or less. So, they're
limited release movie that made.
And I'm
going to
give
most...
you three options. I'm going to be nice because I feel like that is just a super specific question. Was it?
Thank you.
Love and Friendship? Was it Cafe Society, the Woody Allen film, or was it Swiss Army Man?
I know I want it to be Swiss Army Man, so that's what I'm just going to answer to move things along.
Okay, well, you're wrong. It was actually Love and
Damn
Friendship.
It.
Love and Friendship, Rich Stillman's movie, made $14 million in theaters. That's
damn.
Pretty damn good.
Good for you, Whit Stillman.
What?
Good for you, Whit Stillman.
Yeah, does it again. Should make another movie. All right, here's how we'll wrap up. We're in the throes of awards season. But remember last awards season? It was great.
Nope.
Barely.
So these are technically questions about movies that came out in 2015, but we live it for so many weeks at the beginning of 2016. So, Katie, your question, your final question is, who won Best Supporting Actress last year, and for what film?
I was just thinking about Brie Larson. Oh, Jesus Christ. Who was even nominated for Best Supporting Actress last year? Okay. How much time are you going to give me to work this backwards?
I'll give you 20 seconds.
All right, it was Rachel McAdams. She was nominated for Spotlight. It was kind of like, there's a lot of white people.
Oscar so white.
I see Room wasn't in there. Oh my God, my brain has gone completely blank.
This is very difficult.
I am certain... I'm probably going to get fired for like having forgotten all of this so quickly. God, how much time did I spend talking
about
these
classic
the
films
that, I've forgotten this?
That win Oscars to go on to
it was,
movie history?
I was just going to start naming all the other people who won, but I'm going to. This is going to sound bad. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know who won Best Supporting Actress.
It was Alicia Vikander for the Danish.
Oh, Lord.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. Okay, David, what won Best Documentary last year?
Well, you know, Best Documentary, I feel like, historically always goes to the dumbest movie in the category. So, and I wasn't, no, Act of Silence, so The Look of Killing wasn't eligible last year. So...
It wasn't?
Act of Killing, no, Look of Silence.
Look of Silence was eligible last year? It was, yeah.
I
okay.
think
Look
so, yeah.
It was, and it lost. Yeah. It lost, of course.
Scratch one.
And I did, I think my act of resistance was to willfully forget what beat it. But,
I feel like it wasn't bad. I don't remember either,
not,
but I feel like
this
it
is
wasn't.
Not a bad movie. This is not
a bad
movie.
Not a bad movie?
In fact,
okay, hold on. Give me, yeah. No, what's the hint?
I'll give you a hint, but it's not going to count for a point.
No, I don't know if I want the hint.
I'm not going to give it to you then.
The points are too important.
Once I give you the hint, you will 100% get it.
Well, it's probably music related, right? Because they're all music related.
I'm going. I'll give you a lip smack.
Oh, wasn't Listen to Me, Marlin, which is too good. Was it?
Is that?
No.
I don't know. Is that your
no.
guess?
Definitely wasn't.
No, that's too good.
Listen to Me, Marlin is not a music doc.
Yeah, no, I know, but it is a documentary. But it's probably too good.
All right, you have 10 seconds
it wasn't,
here.
Fuck! It wasn't Searching for Sugar Man. It wasn't 20 Feet from Stardom. Oh wait, I'm close. I'm so close. I can.
This
I am sure I can like see it. I can like see it at Sunday. Oh no, it was Citizen Four. No, it wasn't Citizen Four. It was the year before.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Okay, I'm going to tell. No, I'll give you the hint that counts for no points.
All right, give me the hint. Give
it
me the
came
hint.
Out from your favorite little studio.
Oh, Amy!
Yeah,
it was
Amy.
Music.
Amy,
love Amy.
Hey. Amy.
Sorry, no points. Dave, to wrap us up.
It was a music doc, though.
It was. You were on the right track. No points for effort. Dave, what won the best original score last year? Kick-ass score.
Best original score. Last year's movies had
music
scores.
They did. Most of them.
But nothing with like a huge... theme. I'm going to say that it wasn't any of the front runners for any of the acting awards, so it wasn't The Revenant.
I like your powers of deduction here.
That's something with a badass score. I don't even.
It was not.
Blah 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 blah. Okay, I gotta wrap something up here. Mad Max Fury Road?
No, but that was a good guess. It was actually
guess.
The Hateful
it
Eight.
It was who won best score.
Ennio Morricone.
Yeah.
Well, that concludes this year's Patches Matches looking back at 2016 trivia round. Who won? It was Katie Rich.
Hey!
Even though I forgot who won Best Supporting Actress, I'm going to be embarrassed about that for a long time.
Oh, wow.
Don't Joe let Reed. That Hopefully stain. Joe Reed is listening and, like, really mad at
Don't
me.
Don't let that stain your win. Your prize
you know
is...
Yeah, I'm proud of myself.
A La La Land poster from my house. Can you please go pick it up? I really...
No! You are going to mail it to somebody else. There lives a girl everybody calls Patches. Is my darling. Well, I guess that does it for this week's Writing in the War Room. Welcome back to 2017, or welcome to 2017. Welcome back to regular episodes. It's good to be back. We have a quarter quell coming up. Are we going to commit to doing that next week, guys?
I think we should maybe throw in, we might be doing 151 next week. We might be doing 150, but, you know.
I think people have suggestions. I would be open to hear what people... We got a lot of nice notes in 2016 to 2017, that stretch, that week into the new year, about people saying that they really like quarter quells. I don't know. I'd be curious to hear from
people. Yeah, we would happily take suggestions.
Do for the quarter quells if people have better ideas than we do.
Yeah, please. So yeah, there's one coming, so now's a great time to, you know, subscribe if you like that kind of thing. But anyway, we're back. In the meantime, tell the people who you are.
I'm Matt Patches. I'm the senior entertainment editor of Thrillist.com, and I am on Twitter at Mr. Patches. We have a website, fightinginthewarm.com, where you can listen to old episodes, regular quarter quells, anything. You can share them. You can leave comments, questions, anything. We'll check them out. That's fightinginthewarroom.com.
I'm David Ehrlich. I'm the senior film critic for IndieWire. I was late and a little drunk tonight, but 2017, woo!
Off to a great start.
It's going to be fucking lit this year, the last year that we have. You can find me on Twitter at David Ehrlich. You can find all my writing at IndieWire. You can find us all together singing Kumbaya as the meteor approaches Earth at Facebook at Fighting in the War Room.
I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You could find me, I think, this week on Thrillist talking about Slender Man. And if you are a Fighting in the War Room subscriber, you might know from old years past that we used to truncate our RSS feed. I have been benevolent and in 2017 opened it up to over 100 episodes. So you can actually scroll back and get those quarter quells right from your device. Make sure you resubscribe to our RSS feed however you find podcasts. Everything should load up real nice. Merry late Christmas.
Wow. Love this gift. I'm Katie Rich. You can find me at vanityfair.com where I'm writing about Oscar season and we'll clearly forget everything about it by the time next year rolls around. And you can also find me on Twitter at Katie Rich, KateyRich. And we're all on Twitter at FITWR, talking to you, talking to each other, retweeting David's great tweet about Finding Dory, and talking about this week's lightning round question, which was...
In honor of monster trucks and maybe some politics things that happened this week, what's the dumbest movie that brings you joy?
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back talking to you next week.